Okay, so we'll continue with the exploration of the khandhas and reading, started reading from the Khanda Samyutta, and today there's another, yesterday was a discourse by Sariputta, and today is actually another one by Sariputta, and I've just sort of started from the beginning of the Khanda Samyutta, and just sort of is like bang, bang, bang. There's several really good suttas that I thought worthy of reading, and this is the Samyutta 22, Sutta number 2. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans, where there was a town of the Sakyans named Devadaha. Then a number of westward-bound bhikkhus approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Venerable Sir, we wish to go to the western province in order to take up residence there." "Have you taken leave of Sariputta bhikkhus?" "No, Venerable Sir." "Then take leave of Sariputta bhikkhus. Sariputta is wise. He is one who helps his brothers in the holy life." "Yes, Venerable Sir," those bhikkhus replied. Now, on that occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was sitting not far from the Blessed One in a cassia bush. Then those bhikkhus, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's statement, rose from their seats and paid homage to the Blessed One. Then, keeping him on their right, they approached the Venerable Sariputta. They exchanged greetings with the Venerable Sariputta, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, they sat down to one side and said to him, "Friend Sariputta, we wish to go to the western province in order to take up residence there. We have taken leave of the teacher." "Friends, there are wise Khatiyas, wise Brahmins, wise householders, and wise ascetics who question a bhikkhu when he has gone abroad. For wise people, friends, are inquisitive. What does your teacher say? What does he teach? I hope that you, Venerable Ones, have learned the teachings well, grasped them well, attended to them well, reflected on them well, and penetrated them well with wisdom, so that when you answer, you will state what has been said by the Blessed One, and will not misrepresent him with what is contrary to fact, so that you will explain in accordance with the Dhamma, and no reasonable consequence of your assertion would give ground for criticism. We would come from far away, friend, to learn the meaning of this statement from the Venerable Sariputta. It would be good indeed if the Venerable Sariputta would clear up the meaning of this statement." "Then listen and attend closely, friends. I will speak." "Yes, friend," those bhikkhus replied. "The Venerable Sariputta said this. There are, friends, wise Khatiyas, wise Brahmins, wise householders, and wise ascetics who question a bhikkhu when he has gone abroad. For wise people, friends, are inquisitive. What does your teacher say? What does he teach? Being asked thus, you should answer. Our teacher, friends, teaches the removal of desire and lust. When you have answered thus, friends, there may be wise Khatiyas, so on, wise ascetics who will question you further. For wise people, friends, are inquisitive. In regard to what does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust? Being asked thus, friends, you should answer. Our teacher, friends, teaches the removal of desire and lust for form, the removal of desire and lust for feeling, the removal of desire and lust for perception, the removal of desire and lust for volitional formations, the removal of desire and lust for consciousness. When you have answered thus, friends, there may be wise Khatiyas, so on, wise ascetics, who will question you further. For wise people, friends, are inquisitive. Having seen what danger does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust for form, for feeling, for perception, for volitional formations, for consciousness. Being asked thus, friends, you should answer thus. If, friends, one is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to form, then with the change and alteration of form, there arise in one sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. If, friends, one is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to feeling, in regard to perception, in regard to volitional formations, if, friends, one is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to consciousness, then with the change and alteration of consciousness, there arise in one sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. Having seen this danger, our teacher teaches the removal of desire and lust for form, the removal of desire and lust for feeling, the removal of desire and lust for perception, the removal of desire and lust for volitional formations, the removal of desire and lust for consciousness. When you have answered thus, friends, there may be wise Katiyas and so on, wise ascetics, who will question you further. For wise people, friends, are inquisitive. Having seen what benefit does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust for form, for feeling, for perception, for volitional formations, for consciousness? Being asked thus, friends, you should answer thus. If, friends, one is devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to form, then with the change and alteration of form, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair do not arise in one. If one is devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to feeling, perception, volitional formations, consciousness, then with the change and alteration of consciousness, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair do not arise in one. Having seen this benefit, our teacher teaches the removal of desire and lust for form, the removal of desire and lust for feeling, the removal of desire and lust for perception, the removal of desire and lust for volitional formations, the removal of desire and lust for consciousness. If, friends, one who enters and dwells amidst unwholesome states could dwell happily in this very life without vexation, despair, and fever, and if, with the breakup of the body after death, he could expect a good destination, then the Blessed One would not praise the abandoning of unwholesome states. But because one who enters and dwells amidst unwholesome states dwells in suffering in this very life with vexation, despair, and fever, and because he can expect a bad destination with the breakup of the body after death, the Blessed One praises the abandoning of unwholesome states. If, friends, one who enters and dwells amidst wholesome states would dwell in suffering in this very life, with vexation, despair, and fever, and if, with the breakup of the body after death, he could expect a bad destination, then the Blessed One would not praise the acquisition of wholesome states. But because one who enters and dwells amidst wholesome states dwells happily in this very life, without vexation, despair, and fever, and because he can expect a good destination with the breakup of the body after death, the Blessed One praises the acquisition of wholesome states. This is what the Venerable Sariputta said. Elated, those bhikkhus delighted in the Venerable Sariputta statement. So that, so the monks wanting to go off traveling or going to spend the rains retreat somewhere else. This kind of a nice, how do you say, snapshot of the Sangha at the time of the Buddha, and sort of the monks living together, the Buddha encouraging the monastics to go and pay respects to Sariputta. And then when the Buddha says, he says to take leave of Sariputta, because Sariputta is wise. He is one who helps his brothers in the holy life. I think there's a, whether it's in the commentaries or what, no, it's in the suttas where the Buddha himself sort of refers to I think Sariputta as a nurse. Yeah, as a nurse who kind of... Sariputta's mother and Moggallana is the nurse? Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Midwife. Okay. So then, yeah, so that sense of Sariputta looking after the his fellow samanas. And then there's a very nice footnote in this next one of the saying, because it the way it's written is a bit. I say, now on that occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was sitting not far from the Blessed One in a cassia bush. So it sounds like he's sitting, you know, sort of up in a branch or somewhere. Sort of, to me, anyway. It could be construed in that way. But there's a nice, in the footnote, said, this bush grows where there is a constant supply of flowing water. People made a bower with four posts over which they let the bush grow, forming a pavilion. Below this, they made a seat by placing bricks down and strewing sand over them. It was a cool place during the day with a fresh breeze blowing from the water. So that makes a lot more sense. So.
Isn't there something that anyone would tell about Sariputta
having had many lives as a past life? Oh, it's a past life as a monkey, so he's back in his bush again.